Ay.
Fonsi. Tiguá.
Sabes que ya llevo un rato mirándote. Tengo que bailar contigo hoy.
Vi que tu mirada ya estaba llamándome. Muéstrame el camino que yo voy.
Tú eres el imán y yo soy el metal. Me voy acercando y voy armando el plan. Solo con pensarlo se acelera el pulso.
Oh yeah. Ya me está gustando más de lo normal. Todos mis sentidos van pidiendo más. Esto hay que tomarlo sin ningún apuro.
Despacito, quiero respirar tu cuello despacito. Deja que te diga cosas al oído, para que te acuerdes si no estás conmigo. Despacito, quiero desnudarte a besos despacito. Firma las paredes de tu laberinto y hacer de tu cuerpo todo un manuscrito.
Pasito a pasito, suave, suavecito, nos vamos pegando poquito a poquito. Y es que esa belleza es un rompecabezas, pero pa' montarlo aquí tengo la pieza.
Despacito, quiero respirar tu cuello despacito. Deja que te diga cosas al oído, para que te acuerdes si no estás conmigo. Despacito, quiero desnudarte a besos despacito. Firma las paredes de tu laberinto. Hacerlo en una playa en Puerto Rico, hasta que las olas griten ay bendito, para que mi sello se quede contigo.
Pasito a pasito, suave suavecito, lo vamos pegando poquito a poquito.
Que me enseñes a mi boca tus lugares favoritos.
Favorito, favorito. Pasito a pasito, suave suavecito, lo vamos pegando poquito a poquito.
Despacito, despacito. Yeah, you are listening to Recovery Radio this morning, and our topic this morning is all about enabling and a mother's love and addiction. It's a family disease. We're going to be talking about that this morning in depth. The sound that you were just listening to, the song, was Despacito, and my guest that is calling in this morning to talk about addiction as a family disease, she's 71 years old, and she chose that song. A very sweet lady, very energetic lady, a lady that really, really loves her family. She loves her community. She loves her neighborhood. But there are some things that sometimes in addiction and drug use, there are things that we think we know, and we really don't. We find out from research and coming on radio shows like the Recovery Radio, listening to the real information about addiction and opioid use. I last week did a show with a couple who are struggling with addiction, and they came on and talked about their journey and some of the struggles and how each of them is codependent upon each other and something. So, you know, this show is really, really, it's going to touch some hearts. If you'd like to weigh in, you can email me after listening to this podcast at BOYDBW@MSN.com. And you can call the radio station here. It's 304-885-0708. And I believe my special guest is weighing in. She's calling in. Good morning, caller. Are you there? Is this?
Yes.
Good morning. Yes, how are you? Can you put the phone a little closer to your mouth so I can hear you?
Can you hear me now?
Yes, I can hear you now. Who's this, Salim?
This is Salim.
Good morning, Salim. I wasn't expecting you this morning, but since you're on, we have our topic this morning is addiction. Is it a family disease? And I have a special guest coming on, but you can stay on, and I would invite you to kind of weigh in periodically. I'm hoping that she does not really mind three people being a part of this conversation. So I might have to ask you to hang up and call back. As a matter of fact, Celine, okay, would you mind calling back at the bottom of the hour around 9:30, okay, and we can pick up the conversation?
Okay.
Yeah.
I'll do that.
Yeah, yeah. Good talking to you. How's your wife, Celine? Celine is one of my special guests.
She's much better. She's home now.
She's doing much better.
She came home. Mm-hmm. Yeah, we came home yesterday.
Okay. So the prescriptions. Okay. I want to give you a chance before you hang up, because you shared with me about something that you talked to the listening audience about last week, and you said that you had some oxycodone missing from a pill bottle.
Yeah.
You want to talk about that?
Him an apology, and I offered the audience apology because I made a mistake of really accusing the man, and I forgot that I had left the pill home.
Yeah.
Instead of taking them with me, so I did find those pills and offered an apology to him because I was wrong, you know, without looking for those pills before I came back home. I mean, when I got back home.
Well, that's good. I'm really glad to hear that. But that's a learning experience, because it teaches us humility. And, you know, the only way that we can kind of heal the nation from what we're going through, this epidemic, is for people to humble themselves. And so I applaud you for even doing that. And what was the response from the young man? Did you tell him that you apologized? Your son?
I never called his name and stuff like that, so I left it alone. But I still have another type of problem with him on certain things. But I'm apologizing to the audience because I said what I said on the radio.
Yeah, well, most of our listeners do the same thing as you, my brother. So don't be discouraged on, you know. But the apology is, I'm sure, well received.
Okay.
Yeah. So can you?
Offering an apology is a great thing.
Yeah. So what else? My caller didn't call in yet. I was hoping that she would kind of call in and so we can get the conversation going. But in the meantime, I have you on the phone, and I'm so happy for your wife's health is improving, because I know you spent some time, and she's on a lot of prescription medication at this time. Is that correct?
Yeah, but you know, that's a good thing that you made a mention of that, man, because see what has happened, man. I have helped her wean herself off of two of those medications thus far. And one was a fentanyl, which was 100 milligrams. She's off of that. And there's another one called diazepam, and she's off of that. And now we're working on the other. It's a slow process, but it's being done.
So and, you're very optimistic sounding.
Understand.
Yeah.
Endurance and tolerance.
Endurance and tolerance. You want to open that up and talk to us about what you mean?
Yeah. She's going to have to learn how to tolerate, you know, her tolerance, her pain tolerance is real low. And so by her trying to tolerate that medicine, or that pain rather, before she get the medicine, and then by tolerating that medicine, she learned how to endure the pain more so than saying, "I want to take this pill." And that's what we're working on now.
So addiction. So I would take it that your wife is basically addicted because of her pain level. She has to have some sort of opiate in her system.
The ones that she burned, that's the ones that we got her off. Was that what you call fentanyl? We got her off of that. I mean, we didn't get it off. Me and her worked on it. You know, for me being a drug user and how I cold turkey myself, I work with her in a different sense.
And so what is a cold turkey? Is that something we eat at Thanksgiving after dinner?
You know, cold turkey, man, is when you don't use no drugs, no nothing. You just lay there and suffer the pain and endure the suffering that is going on and the withdrawal that you have when you going through not having any heroin in your body. And so it took me about 40 days to endure that. And once I got myself over that, man, I was good to go.
Well, the fentanyl. So your wife is on fentanyl, and the withdrawal she's off fentanyl now.
Been off of that for over a year.
That is a very strong and powerful drug. They use that in surgery. So I had no idea, so you've enlightened me, that they prescribed fentanyl as a pain management that you can take at home. So tell me, when you go to the drugstore to get your prescription for fentanyl, what's the cost?
Oh man, you know, insurance brings that down. So,
You have insurance, right? You got to have insurance in this country, yeah.
You got to have insurance to get it.
Yeah.
If you don't have insurance, you just not. It's going to cost you because at one point in time, it was some pills that was costing us about $800 just for 90.
For 90.
We refused to take those pills at all.
Do you recall the name of those that prescription?
I forget the name of that particular pill, but it was some kind of pain pill or whatever they wanted to put her on, and we refused that.
Okay. You
know? But the fentanyl, I forget how much it was, but it cost a pretty penny.
Mm-hmm.
But the insurance paid for it.
Okay.
The insurance paid for it, but. Matter of fact, man, she don't really, she's really, man, at the point where she really don't really need anything now. And we get ready to go to pain management tomorrow, and she's going to tell them not to write prescriptions for certain pills anymore.
Okay, so you're doing that all on your own, and so I would imagine that the pain management, and so you took it upon yourself. I wouldn't suggest that to people to do. You have to consult your physician.
No. See, and I'm glad you brought that up because my approach with this situation is something that I wouldn't recommend to everyone or everybody. It's just something that we agreed upon. And that's why I said it was about her tolerance and endurance. and so since she has learned to understand in her head that listen, this is something that I'm going to have to tolerate. I'm going to have to tolerate pain. And my mind has to increase my endurance to tolerate this stuff. You're not going to get over it just by dropping it. You're going to hurt yourself. You're going to throw your body into a shock. Mm-hmm. And it's a way you have to work with it. You just don't drop anything. You know, I was forced to drop mine and do cold turkey because I was incarcerated.
Yeah, so that was forced upon you. And so tell me now that the our title of this morning's broadcast is addiction. Is it a family disease? And so how do you feel about that? I mean, I know that you're doing all that you can.
Well, you're right. You're right. It's more of a family disease than just mine. Mm-hmm. Because what it would do is going to destroy. Remember one time before I was speaking to you how I got so bad in using the drugs, and you remember how we used to come to my house and I used to always have the sets? You know, we call them sets. I don't know what they call them today.
It's a set.
We go down in my basement, we get high, and my man, you know how my family was, and the next thing you know, my mother left. And then now my sister, she was the last to leave. And then it was just me and my brother.
Yeah, I lived there for a minute with you guys. Yeah.
And how we all was using the house for basically for a drug house.
Yeah.
So, you know, I was really destroying my own family and really didn't realize it because I was too blind to look at what I was doing against them for myself.
So that endurance piece, I mean, it goes a long ways. It stretches wide. And so addiction as a family disease, how are you coping with that in, you know, taking care of your wife, going to the store, you know, making sure her prescriptions are filled?
I take care of all the things.
You have sons, you have grandsons or sons.
Yeah, but they don't. Everyone, all of her children and everybody knows what to do for her or whatever. But she has truly recovered from anything that she has been using, and so we are at the stage now where she won't be using any OD drugs at all.
So all of her opioids are coming by way of a legal way, right? You get hers in prescription, but they're still the same pills.
I think we had our last prescription, which will be tomorrow. We tell them that we no longer need those prescriptions.
So your wife, how long has she been on these prescription drugs?
About 3 years.
Okay, about 3 years. So her the reason for her prescription drugs has gotten better, or it has stayed the same? It has gotten better. She can tolerate more.
The tolerance level has grown, and that's what we worked on.
Okay.
We worked on tolerance and endurance. And
how does this affect the rest of the people in your household?
Letting her know that she has to live with this pain.
How does it affect the rest of the people in your household? Emotionally, how does it affect everybody? Or have you all gotten used to coexisting along with all the struggles with the health?
That's the correct way of putting it. Everyone has gotten used to it and coexisting with whatever is going on. But everyone is happy to see that she is not that dependent anymore on drugs.
So how is it affecting you emotionally, Celine? You know, because the reason I'm asking that is there comes a point in the recovery process when you certainly get recovered, because as a person who used opioids abusively yourself, and to be able to manage, because you could very easily pop a couple of these pills. And I have another caller coming in. Celine, can you Can you just kind of chime in? And
yeah, who's calling in, please?
This is Brother Raheem.
Okay.
Okay. Salim, you there? Did you hear that caller?
Yeah.
That sounds like one of your friends. Hi, Brother Raheem. How are you?
This is Raheem.
Appreciate you calling.
Too long, too long, Brother Salim.
Yes, sir. Yes, sir. What about me, baby?
Well,
yeah, I'm the host of the show. You're supposed to speak to me first.
What's good, brother? What's good?
How you
brother?
Doing? Nothing, man. I'm glad. This is old home week. I appreciate you guys calling in because we have the three of us from Newark, New Jersey. We're on a mission, you know, and we're trying to write this book about the playground. And so, Brother Raheem he's one of the younger. Are you younger? You younger than I am, aren't you? Yeah, you're the little boy in the group.
I'm the youngest out of all of y'all.
No, you ain't. You know you're not.
I'm the youngest out of the three.
Well, our topic this morning, look, you're going to come on the radio. I'm going to have you. We're going to fact check you, brother, and put you on blast. Hey. So, Raheem, our topic this morning is addiction and as a family disease. That was our topic, and Celine was sharing about his experiences. How has addiction affected your family, Raheem? Can you go ahead and take a couple of minutes and talk to us about that? I'd like you to start with Debbie.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, that's very, very...
That's a sensitive topic.
I know.
But, my sister, you know, got into... drugs at an early age because her boyfriend, which we all know, I mentioned his name. We used to call him because don't nobody else know him. Little Man.
Yeah.
He introduced her to that, and it had a big effect on.
What did he introduce her to? What did he introduce her to? Can you be most heroin, right?
Yeah.
Okay, go ahead. And the reason that I interjected, Raheem, the reason I said that, let me clarify. The reason I asked you that and to be more specific is because there is a number of substances that are around today that leads to heroin. And they were not around when Debbie was here with us. So go ahead. Starting with Debbie, Lil Man introduced her to heroin.
Yeah, he did, but I didn't find out till it was too late, because all of us used to get high together. Me, you, Slim, Little Man, all the fellas, we used to get high together. But what they was doing was on their own time, and keeping it low key.
Mm-hmm.
Till one day I happened to be coming upstairs and they was sitting in the hallway nodding out.
Mm-hmm.
And, right then and there, I knew what the deal was, but I couldn't say nothing to her,
Mm-hmm.
She had a mind of her own, but that's my little baby sister, man,
So using hindsight.
I wanted to beat the hell out of her, man, tell the truth, but it wouldn't have did no good, because I jacked him up, but it wouldn't have did no good because they was right at it the next day. It was just, but I never told my mother. I just kept it amongst us.
Yeah.
But I wouldn't get high with her.
Yeah.
Or around her, or I didn't want to see her getting high.
So we got a whole lot of stuff we can talk about. That's good. I'm glad you brought that up. So
my family found out.
Mm-hmm.
It was like really a devastating thing.
But for everybody.
With kids and stuff, all that by then,
Yeah. So, Celine. Celine, let's get back to your part. Okay, how did heroin addiction? Well, let's talk about the playground part. How did a heroin addiction affect your family, and how many members in your family was affected?
What you mean?
Directly affected, like as far as use and emotions and.
It was only me and Sutan that it directly affected.
Mm-hmm.
Jock, he tried to even smoke marijuana and didn't even know what he was smoking with that, you know. Yeah. But it only affected Sutan.
Mm-hmm. And in my family, it was just me early on with heroin. Nobody else in the family used heroin except my baby brother. Once I found out that one of my closest friends, he's passed on now, Hassan, he gave Jerry some heroin. Him and Buddy, actually, and I found out about it.
What? I didn't even know that.
Yeah, they took him to Harlem.
Me too.
Yeah. Yeah, yeah, that's news.
Right. I didn't even know that.
Yeah, he did it twice.
A deacon.
Yeah, he did it twice. And so here's the thing. And so one of the good things about this conversation this morning is one of the really good things that I like is that we don't have to whisper about it anymore.
Right.
You know, and the way that we move forward to create a healing forest is to be able to talk about it and talk about our experiences and to look at everybody's experience and see what the differences are and see what the same is in our experiences and get those experiences and put them all together, take a really close look at it, and then we can heal this thing. We can heal the nation. And so I really appreciate you guys sharing that on the air like that, even though we just touched the tip of the iceberg. Can you see that, Raheem?
So
addiction. Hey, go ahead,
James. Like for back then, the only one that was really affected by that, you know, was me, because I was the only one doing it till I found out my sister was using.
Mm-hmm.
But you know, like my mother, you know, none of them didn't know because I kept it low key away from them, and I make sure when I come in the house if I'm feeling it, they all sleep, you know.
Mm-hmm.
But like my brothers, they used to tell me, we remember you coming in the house with your peach cobbler and your ice cream, sitting up there and on nodding out. Then you're going in the bathroom throwing up, you know. But they thought it was just from drinking. They didn't know, but all of y'all know I was never a drinker.
And you know what? And I gotta tell you, Raheem,
I don't think they had a puking contest.
Yeah, I don't think that the family, because one of the things that I thought, I misled myself for many years. I thought that because I didn't nod in public, nobody knew I was high.
Yeah.
But everybody knew I was high. Everybody knew you was high, Raheem.
Not to cut you off, we wasn't like that. We wasn't like getting stoned out and nodding all in public and... We had a spot where we'd go and sit and chill, you know, and enjoy our high.
That I'm gonna make a cartoon out of that for real, because everybody knew we was getting high, brother. They knew something was wrong. Yeah. They just didn't know exactly what. That's why everybody was lumped into the same category, junkie. So we needed. I long ago realized that was, I was just tricking myself. But families as an addiction is a family disease. When do you buy into the idea of Salim? I'm talking to you now. Do you buy into the idea that opioid addiction is a disease or is it not? What do you think?
Yeah, it's a disease.
So did you have you had this disease, right?
Yeah.
You had the disease, Ryan.
Well, we remember now when we was in Vietnam, man. You know we were doing binoctol and number 10. Remember we used to have those over there in Vietnam.
I do remember.
Take those pills over there in Vietnam. We used to take those pills in Vietnam.
Opioids, that's right.
The things would put you out for about 2 or 3 days.
But then you build up a tolerance. So addiction as a family disease, and I know that this is the first time we're having this conversation, fellas, the three of us, but take a look just take a look, you know, use your hindsight for a minute and just take a look back at how it affected the family. You know, I remember the first time my mother found a needle and an eyedropper in my coat pocket and three cigarettes. And she came in the room and had it in her hand. And so, you know, the addiction, your lying mode kicks in really quickly when you're using substance. So I told her, I blamed it on one of y'all. Not either one of you. I told her it was Wesley's. I told her I was holding it for Chink. That's what I told her. and she gave it back. She gave it back and told me to take it back to him. So how does it affect the family? Go ahead.
I'm laughing because my mother found the syringe and the cooker and everything. And
how old were you?
I told it was Celine. Uh-oh. You know, I said, "Mine, that ain't mine. That's Jeffrey. I was hiding it from him."
Wait a minute. Celine, did you know that? Here it is in 2018, and I'm sure. What year was that, Raheem?
This was back in about 60. When year was the ride? It was the year after the ride, 68.
67 was the riot.
Yeah, okay. So this was the year after the riot, because I didn't get high until after the riot. Yeah. I didn't start until after the riot.
And when you got high, that's when the riot started, isn't it? Because my riot didn't stop till 1994.
That was the real riot.
That's James Boyd's fault.
Hey, and you know what? And that's another topic, man, because I turned out quite a few people. I turned them out, and I'm not wearing that as a badge of honor. I'm saying that because I need to talk about it. I turned out quite a few people. And as a matter of fact, I'm glad I'm down here in West Virginia because I'm going to say this. I'm the one that introduced Debbie to Lil Man. But you know that, right, Raheem?
And yeah, I regret that.
I did. I thought he was quiet. Lil Man was short and rough looking. And Debbie was always really, really quiet and beautiful. And Lil Man was my neighbor. Yeah. So families, how addiction affects families. So Celine, I need you to mark it down. You know, Raheem told Miss Lorraine that needle was yours.
Addiction affects family. See, our addiction not only affected our family, addiction affected each other's family because Raheem's mother lived across the street. Well, me and Raheem lived across the street from each other, and Miss Lorraine used to watch us all, you know, from the window.
Mm-hmm.
And go down the alleyway. Yeah.
And when Lil Man introduced Debbie to them drugs, see, that's when I wanted to take a bat and break every bone in his body because I knew what them drugs was gonna do.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
So why, if you knew what the drugs would do, why didn't you stop us?
He told me that I should whoop his behind.
Who told you that?
He introduced your sister to that man and. You know, but it was just too late. Yeah. Whooping his behind wouldn't have did nothing, man.
Yeah.
You know.
Well, let me ask you.
Either gave me the satisfaction of breaking this little mouth up.
Rest in peace, David Eford.
Yeah.
Y'all gonna beat up the dead man.
After what my sister went through, maybe I wish I would. When I think about what she went through, what he took her through, drug her through the mud, I wish I had her. Did what I wanted to do.
Exactly. You so know. that is my point.
Hey, James, let me say something to you, brother.
Go ahead.
Like you said, you turned out quite a few people in this and that and other, and you want to make amends. Look, if we didn't want to do that, we wouldn't have did it. It ain't nothing that you tricked us into doing it or anything like that. Every time a person that you introduced to it, we ask. Because I asked you, And in fact, I damn near made you. Come on, man. Won't y'all let me just taste it? Just mm-hmm. give me a little bit.
Mm-hmm.
And y'all was, James, you were saying no.
Yeah.
You were saying no. Celine was saying no. You know? And everybody was like, go ahead, man. Just give him a little shot. You're like, no, man. You don't need this. I'm like, yo, man. Well, I ain't going to give y'all no more money. And then you drew up that.
Yeah. They say money. Money. Money would make people do things. But families.
I don't regret you or nothing like that. We was all tight like that, man. And I could have just did it that first time and said, no, I don't like this. I ain't doing this no more.
Mm-hmm.
You know.
That's what my brother did.
It wasn't like that. That was a high that the first time you fall in love with it.
Mm-hmm.
Like so love how, at first sight.
And so how come my brother Jerry didn't, I guess... He didn't do it again.
It depends on the person.
Yeah. So.
It depends on the person.
You know what? Bill and Buddy, you know, it depends on where they got their drugs from. They might have got some of that weak stuff. Because, you know, at the time, they used to sell some garbage in the neighborhood. And so if they got some garbage, you know, they may have gave him some water with just a little bit of drugs in it. And so he never felt the effect. Now, if he'd have got some of that good stuff that we used to get.
Blue magic.
And the way he was saying, it's love at first sight, at first poke.
Mm-hmm.
Once you get that into your body, you're hooked. Now, you know, we used to draw up people some water and shoot them some water. And they would feel like they cold-blooded high, like Barry. Remember Barry?
Yeah, Barry and Donnell.
Barry used to live down there.
Yeah, I know Barry. Barry and Donnell used to be fish, people.
Barry Brown.
Yeah.
Barry Brown.
Remember when we used to give him a little water at first?
Mm-hmm.
He thought like hell he was high.
Yeah. Yeah. So.
Hey, Celine, you know, Buddy, you know, back then, Buddy, Bill, and Will Goat, they get high for anything.
Anything. That's right.
Yeah.
And so these kids today. Let's fast forward a minute.
Up off it and we wouldn't feel nothing.
Raheem, let's fast forward a second here, because we're talking about families. Now, what would you say to a family today, who? Is affected, they got a loved one or that's in the family running around in the house taking the checkbooks and everything, that what would you say to a family like that as to how they can get on top of this? Do you think they should just leave them alone or get them some support?
No, that's the worst thing you do is turn your back or leave them alone. You try to give them some insight, try to help them. I would tell them, like, look, let me tell you something. The high may be good, all that's great, you know, but it ain't no party, you know, because it will tear you down. Mm-hmm. And if you think you can beat it, you're dead wrong.
Mm-hmm.
Ain't a person I know beat that heroin yet.
That's
you
right.
You got rich people that ain't beat it, you know?
So that's an economic question.
Get yourself together. Get away from people, places, and things that causing you to do this. Because it's not a good trip, I'm going to tell you now. It's one of the worst journeys that you could ever want to take.
Mm-hmm.
It will tear you down, tear you apart, make people hate you, make you do things to people that a normal person wouldn't think of doing.
Mm-hmm.
Have you going places to get it that... If you was in your right mind, you wouldn't get it. I think today, the places that we used to go to cop, cross roofs, in and out of windows, vacant buildings, in basements, you know.
Even defying.
The places even, when we went to New York.
Yeah, yeah. Even defying the police. Let me tell you a little story, man. I was in the Bronx, and I had just bought a bag of dope. And a policeman on a moped. You know they should ride them little mopeds around and all up on the sidewalk. He saw me, and I was sick. My last $10. And he saw me, and he said, come in. And I started running. So he drove, following behind me. You know, I'm about three quarters of a block ahead of him because I couldn't run that fast. I was sick. And I turned into the alleyways. Everywhere I turned, somebody on the sidewalk was pointing to the, telling the policeman where I had went. Now, these are the same people that was out there buying dope as well. That policeman chased me, chased me on that motorcycle, on that moped, until I got tired. I couldn't run no more. And he came up behind me, and he said to me, he said, "You the stupidest fool I ever seen. What makes you think you can outrun this motorized vehicle?" And he said, "And your buddies down the street told me where you went." And I mean, I was breathing. I got locked up, 5 years probation out of that. One little $10 bag of dope. But I'm going to tell you, like what you said, Raheem, it'll have you doing stuff that's stupid. And what made me think I could outrun that man on that motorcycle, on that moped? So what I'm saying now is that most people, Raheem, you said you learn things. You learn what not to do, where not to go. And I want to share with you a little article because we're talking about families and addiction. It says, "Enabling behavior occurs when another person, often a codependent, helps or encourages the addict to continue using drugs, either directly or indirectly. Examples of individuals involved in enabling behavior are a spouse hiding the addict's disease from the neighbors or their children by lying for the addict, and a so-called friend giving the addict money to buy drugs. One of the worst things that you can do for an addict, somebody that's addicted, and this is family codependency, is to give them money." I was hoping that my guest would call in this morning because that's exactly what she did just a few days ago. And she justifies it because she told her addict son, "Listen, I have a gardener who comes and do the yard work. But I'm going to fire the gardener and let you do the yard work if you promise me that you won't buy drugs." And this is not the, and he accepted that deal. Exactly. "Yes, ma'am. I'm going to do it, Mom."
Oh, yeah.
And she paid him up front. She paid him up front. And this is why I believe that she's not calling in this morning, because up front didn't work. She paid him the money, and there's a no-show going on. So we have to, I believe that because we're able to talk about this stuff in the open, we can help a lot of people. Mm-hmm. Because our strength and our journey, because we went there and we're back. Everybody didn't make it back, you know?
Right.
So how have you... go ahead.
If she's listening... Sweetheart, let me tell you something. Don't be embarrassed. Don't feel bad about what you did. It was a choice that you made that you thought you was doing to help him. Mm-hmm. It wasn't you. It was him.
It was him.
He the one that knew when you offered him the deal what he was going to do. You know, so call in. If we could give some insight on, you know, how to be strong about that, you know, we will. But don't be down on yourself because you made a choice like that. We all make bad choices, and we won't know they bad until we make them.
Mm-hmm.
You know? No, let me retract that, because some choices we know is bad, but we do it anyway.
Like running from the policeman.
The decision that you made thinking that you was going to help him, but in the long run, all you did was feed fire to the fuel.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, fuel to the fire.
That's right. Celine, you want to weigh in on that?
It happens.
Mm-hmm. What do you think?
It happens. It really happens, you know.
Celine, you there?
Same thing with my first wife.
Yeah.
When I stopped, I thought by, you know, me making sure that she was okay, that I was doing her a favor, because I didn't want her to go out in the street.
Mm-hmm.
But,
yeah.
It happened anyway.
I should have beat you down for that.
You should have what?
Yeah.
Oh, you mean...
I should have beat you down for that.
For that Carell?
No.
What?
Yeah. Hey, but Celine. Yeah. But you gotta, y'all, both of y'all should remember, when I went away, that's when she started. Remember? Mm. I was away.
So you say you were away like you was on vacation. Where was you away at?
Yeah, well, no, I went to prison.
Okay, you went to prison.
I went to prison, and she was with Lulu.
You went to prison because of what, Raheem?
Drugs.
Okay.
Drugs.
Uh-oh, he's saying that again. Celine said that before. What happened in the courtroom, Celine? Go ahead, get it out there.
He wasn't even there.
Wait, the grapevine.
He wasn't even there.
I didn't have to be there. They came back and said that. So they gave him the time. He said, "Woo."
And he fell out on the floor. if they needed some Narcan for you, bro.
This would happen.
OD'd on that time. Go ahead.
I never been away before in my life, man. I had already did 6 months in Caldwell, 5 months in the county waiting to go to court. That's 11 months. I'm thinking when I go to court, the judge gonna cut me loose. He started kicking out on documents, such and such and such, and this and that. And I'm listening to these numbers. And that's all I heard was numbers. And my head started spinning. And next thing I know, they were throwing water on me because I was gone. I passed out, brother. I thought the man gave me 1,000 years, man.
Your math was really off.
No, because the brothers that was on a tier with me, they'd be like, the judge will knock them socks off of selling drugs to them kids at the school, which I wasn't, never, but they were just saying that, joking and stuff. And when they said the judge will knock my socks off, I thought that's what he did. I passed out. Celine, when I see you, I'm gonna punch you right in the face.
Hey, it's a good thing you ain't passed out up in Harlem somewhere or something like that, because somebody... like Hassan did, and he woke up, his pants was down.
Going back to affecting the family.
Okay, go ahead.
Yeah. When we really look at this here thing, man, not only did we affect, like I said, the family, we affected our friends, but man, we affected the neighborhood.
That's right. Really bad.
You know, I think you said earlier, how did we all started, or where it all started from? Now, you know, just to make a thing just as quick as possible, you know, we started out drinking a little Boone Farm and Tiger Rose, and what was that other one that we used to drink in the green bottle of the wine?
I forget.
Wild Irish Rose. Now, we used to drink all of this shit. Never did we know anything. We weren't even smoking weed back during that time.
Never did we know all of those.
And then we gradually went to other stuff. And that's how things happen with people. When you think that you can take a friendly drink, ain't no friendly drink. Because once you start drinking with your friends, if a friend introduced you to a drink, they're going to destroy you. Because the next thing they can introduce you to is some drugs and so forth and so on. And what it hurt most, man, is the women. The women become worse. It's worse for women than it is for men.
And how so?
Women, they going to sell their body and the things that they do to make... out there, cause you know we was in New York, man, and we seen so many women over there in New York like that, man. And that's how it all started. Being introduced to a glass of wine.
So Harlem is much better now than...
Going to parties and thinking that you're partying with some friends. And the next thing you know... you remember Marvin Walker, big time guy with Merrill Lynch. Got introduced to what? Went to a party, got introduced to some cocaine, and then what happened? Next thing you know, Marvin living in a house over here, talking about he can hear you walking down the street smoking crack cocaine.
Yeah, he's
lost.
It's a psychosis that takes place. Yeah. It's a psychosis.
Somebody look what someone did to his brother. Put a Mickey in his brother. The boy was a big time executive in Exxon. When we was back during that time, he was doing $100,000 way back then.
Mm-hmm.
Now today he walks around a zombie.
Mm-hmm. Because of your drugs.
Who you be with?
Mm-hmm.
Where you go and who or whatever, you can affect anyone.
Mm-hmm.
When somebody give you something, they're affecting not only you but your whole family,
mm-hmm,
and your whole neighborhood. That's what they do.
Bro. Misery love company, boy.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, now I want to share something. Misery, we got a few more company, minutes.
Man.
We got a few minutes here.
No fan will introduce you to drugs quick. So
hey fellas, I want to share something with the group here for a second. We got a few minutes and we're gonna close it out. It says, what can you do if you have a loved one who is abusing drugs? If you have a loved one who is abusing drugs and alcohol, one of the first things you can do is call either Alcoholics Anonymous or Narcotics Anonymous, or you can call the Recovery Radio. Call me here. And let me get that number. The number is 304-885-0708. Call the Recovery Radio. It says that, go to an anonymous meeting and find out where there are meetings for the families of abusers and begin attending those meetings. There is no cost, and you get to meet with other families who are dealing with the same problem. The purpose of the meeting is to learn from one another how to stop being codependent and how to stop enabling behavior. And so that is one of the situations that's really taken off here in Berkeley and Jefferson County is the enabling piece. People are still walking around in denial because they believe that it's everybody else's fault. I do buy into the idea about the oxycodone now because I know that that's big pharma. But when people can't get the oxycodone and the Percocets, they go to heroin, which is much cheaper, and nowadays it's a lot more powerful. We were talking, Salim, about how we used to get drugs. So when did the P-dope, remember they used to call it P-dope, and they called it because you got such a small amount. I believe that when the P-dope came, the fentanyl was in it at that time, or something stronger, because...
And it was more potent than regular heroin.
Right. So what's regular heroin, Raheem? Give me your take on regular.
Uh-huh.
You called it regular. What's regular heroin?
Well, I mean, heroin, straight up heroin. Not cut with nothing but quinine.
Bonita? Bonita?
This pedo.
They used to just cut it with quinine. That was regular heroin.
Mm-hmm. That made you itch.
With yeah.
Quinine. Yeah. With pedo, I don't know anything.
I don't know what they put in that pedo.
So
that pedo was cut with horse tranquilizers or something. You know, it was just more. It was more potent than that little bit that you got. Was more potent than heroin was. That's why it became so popular.
It's a synthetic they put in it, right?
Diesel. They started calling it diesel.
Diesel.
Yeah.
What did that mean?
Yeah.
What was that?
It's the same. It was pedo, but they just changed the name to diesel.
Because of the strength?
Because it was stronger.
Uh-huh.
Yeah.
Yeah.
The diesel. So you take the diesel, and so I heard you say, Raheem, earlier that you're not in your right mind. So they've established that there's a process of diminished capacity that takes place in the body. It affects the endorphins, the pleasure center of a person's. And so when you say that you fall in love with it, well, that's true because you have a place in your brain for pleasure.
Mm-hmm. And what it is, when I said that you fall in love with it, because every dope fiend, ex-junkie or junkie knew that that first shot of heroin is the best shot. And whoever listening, don't think that I'm saying it for you to go out there and take a shot because it's the best. Stay away from it. But all the other shots is trying to find that first shot again.
And And so many people have said that.
And that's how you off to the races, end up with a habit, trying to find that first high. That first high is done and gone. The rest of it is just all in your mind of trying to find it.
Yeah, yeah. And then, addiction, and you know, addiction and family. Addiction and family.
Your body needs it.
Yeah. So we got about 30 seconds. We got about 30 seconds and we're going to wrap it up. Let me share this and then you guys can close it out. It says, do not provide money or a place to live for the individual who is abusing drugs. Instead, insist that they get themselves into a drug counseling program. Many people need to go through detox before anything else. Detox is done inpatient in a drug rehab program. If necessary and necessity depends on the kind of drugs the patient is addicted to, medications are used to ease the process of detox. Then once detoxed, the patient is referred for drug rehab that can take many months of treatment. After all of this, the patient should attend AA or NA meetings. So my thing is, after all of that, after rehab, after detox, after all of the conversations, then what? What do you do next? So that is the reason that it's important that we come on the radio as people who have recovered from substance abuse and just share our experiences so people can draw from that and use that in their recovery. Do you agree?
I slightly agree with one, except one exception. It says do not provide them a home.
Mm-hmm.
Once you provide them a home, what you have done is sent them to the streets. That's where they're going to stay, and that's where they're going to find out every trick of the trade is in the street. So when you don't provide them for a home, then you got a problem. Okay. Now, you break them into your home and let them know in order to stay here, you got to go to recovery. But you force them to the street, you have doomed them. Mm-hmm. They are doomed.
Mm-hmm. So what I find, go ahead.
Let me intervene, as far as, like putting them in the inpatient and all this, everything being for real, the person has to want to get better.
Yes.
He has to want, or she has to want to stop. You can't force them.
Mm-hmm.
I have seen guys go to prison 3-4 years, come out, the first thing they do is look for a bag of dope.
Mm-hmm.
Yep.
Now, you've been clean all them years while you was in prison. Soon as you come home, you trying to get that bag of dope, thinking that you can shoot four bags that you shot before you left and end up dying. I've seen people go to rehab, stay in there 6-7 months or whatever, come out, and the first thing they do, I'm just going to get high one time, and that's it. And they off to the races. The person got to really want to do it for themselves. You can't do it for them. I told my brother, I said, look, how I did it might not work for you. You got to come up with your own scheme, but you got to be the one that wants to stop.
Okay.
I can't be the one that want to stop for you.
Yeah,
I can help you, you on the right guidance or the right path, but you got to really want to stop.
Okay.
You got to be sick and tired of being sick and tired.
Amen to that, brother.
And that's for anybody that's listening.
There you go. We're going to get it out there. We're going to put it out there. Hey, I appreciate you guys this morning, man. Thank you, Raheem. Raheem, I hope we're not going to get you fired, man. Where you at?
Huh?
I hope we're not going to get you fired. You just snuck upstairs again?
You know it.
Okay, we're going to close out. We're going to close out with everybody's favorite. Go ahead, Celine. You got 30 seconds.
I called him just before I called him and telling him to call
him. Okay. All right. Thanks, fellas. We're getting ready to close out, okay? We out of time, and I appreciate you guys, man. All right. Love you, man.
James, if I don't call in on Tuesdays because I don't got kind of busy.
All right. Thanks, man.
All right. Hey, love y'all guys.
Love you,
man.
Too.
Love you, man.
Don't need to escalate. You see, war is not the answer, for only love can conquer hate.
rocket science. Don't punish me with brutality.